you know, conference call, Megan Rapinoe's just taking it at Carlos Carter, dropping F bombs, and she was like, I would never.
Yeah, she would.
She would.
And
Narrator,
did.
Voice, she would, and she did.
Yes. Oh, man. Hello. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Debatable, a fake television show where we debate nothing. Charles McDonald, hello. Can I do the thing where I point at you accurately? Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
McDonald.
Good job.
New boss this time.
Again, the embodiment of our mortality, Sarah. Charles is a young person, and we are not anymore. But this is Sarah Spain, who is as energized as any young person that
That's
I
That's right.
Know.
That's right.
That's right. And Alabaster, I missed your return show yesterday, but you went to Columbia, you participated Ooh. In various purge-like activities over a quote-unquote wedding, so welcome back to you too. You were missed, although Mr. Cellophane did a bang-up job replacing you temporarily.
Wait a minute. Purge like Aaron Rodgers style? Like evacuations out both ends? Or why was it purge like going to a wedding? Like
and why
the
was
purge?
Question.
He murdered people?
We'll leave that up to the imagination.
Quote unquote wedding. What does quote unquote wedding mean?
This was the excuse that was given. I just think that there were other things that were going on. That
he went to Columbia for the purge, but said it was a wedding. Okay.
For the record.
I just think he did some things that he doesn't want to tell us about. Is the vibe I get?
Depending on
it was a dope wedding.
It was a dope wedding.
And I did. I took my talents to Columbia. Uh-huh. Which segues into our first topic.
Oh,
where
wow.
We're gonna
Look
fulfill...
at him trying to move right off his own
That's
personal
right.
life.
We're going to fulfill our contractual obligations and talk about LeBron, the Lakers, and LeBron's mm-hmm. future. And mm-hmm. our question after Bill Oram wrote about this for The Athletic, how do you think the rest of LeBron's tenure in LA will play out?
I mean, this story is the narcotic that we love to be addicted to, incidentally. Like, thank you, LeBron James, back behind the scenes, backstage sort of disclosure here. We were wondering, like, what are we going to talk about today? And then we saw a story in The Athletic that declared that, quote unquote, we are in the early stages of a war between LeBron James and the Lakers. And by the Lakers, I think specifically, we can say Rob Pelinka, the general manager of the Lakers, the guy who LeBron has been, and I would say subtweeting here, but like he has not just been subtweeting, he's been straight up explicitly praising other people who do the job of general manager across all of sports, right? Les Snead wearing a t-shirt with a photo of Les Snead on it. LeBron loves that because yes, F them picks. Legend, my type of guy, was the quote. Sam Presti, you may be wondering, who's that guy? Well, he's the MVP of the NBA, apparently, per LeBron James, because he drafted players like Josh Giddey, Thunder rookie.
And his
LeBron
team has like 11 wins.
That's
so
right.
that's usually who you're going to name the MVP, is whoever's overseeing the 11-win team at the break.
Yes, LeBron James voting for Sam Presti, but also, just for the sake of full accounting here, voting also for Kobe Altman, it would seem. The general manager, now president of basketball operations in Cleveland, his former team, because, quote, those guys have done an unbelievable
so
job
calculated.
Drafting and making trades, end quote. And the calculation, Sarah, like, I feel like this will play out very calculatedly. Like, LeBron James is many things. He's many talents. One of them is not subtlety. And we kind of know what's happening here.
Right. Well, first of all, I appreciate both Aaron Rodgers and LeBron James, who are always the content saviors, the narcotics that we go to in times of need. Yesterday, Aaron provided, and today it is LeBron. When someone said this is like the beginnings of war, I wasn't sure if they were talking about the band. Like, was it when they were writing Lowrider? I think that's the song that they sung. Because it seems like a little dramatic to describe this as the beginning of war. But to your point, LeBron does always find himself embroiled in these things. And the two examples that you just gave are perfectly articulate how difficult it is to try to manipulate a team around a star like LeBron. On the one hand, he's saying F them picks. On the other hand, he is saying how great these guys are for properly using their picks.
That's right.
On the one hand, he is saying that this one team is so great because they're accurately rebuilding during a time of great need. And on the other hand, he is not ever allowing any team that he is on to enter any sort of rebuilding phase in order to produce the kind of talent around him that will support a title. He goes out and plays shadow GM, and then he's angry at the cards that he deals himself. it is impossible to reconcile. And the only reason he gets away with it continually is because LeBron is fantastic, because he's averaging 29.8 rebounds, 7 assists, despite being 37 years old. So at every turn, the team has to acquiesce to him. The fact that he doesn't have an option at the end of this season going into his last year with the Lakers is what's making this so tricky. He does not have the power to say to them, if you don't do the things I want, I will leave, because he's contractually obligated to say, which returns us to the original question. It's just, how do we see this happening? I think there's a real opportunity for them to look at the decrepit body of Anthony Davis, which is only continuing to deteriorate, so and sad. Ask themselves, yeah. I feel awful. I mean, it's such a sad loss of potential greatness, but if you're being realistic about it, do you trade him now for a number of picks that can build a team around, because you don't think that he's the 1A that will take you into the future after LeBron leaves? It allows you to surround LeBron with more talent that will maybe make it more likely that they can succeed in the moment. I don't think LeBron will force his way out before next season, because the Lakers are still very well placed to grab free agent talent and for people to want to come play with LeBron while he's still playing this way and in his final years. I don't see him forcing his way out, but I do see there being a major public butting of heads with Pelinka ahead of them figuring out what they need to do in the offseason.
Yeah, and I think for the Lakers and how this ends is, it's going to be a little rocky because they're not in a good spot right now. You have the dynamic duo of LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and so far, like, you kind of it's weird because I feel like if you're a Lakers fan, you're satisfied but also dissatisfied with what has happened with this LeBron James and Anthony Davis duo, because you did get that bubble championship, you did get, you know, the one thing that you were hoping for, but you were also hoping for some sustained greatness beyond just the one little run in the bubble. And right now, it's hard to say whether that's going to come true or not. I think everyone saw the warning signs with the potential Russell Westbrook acquisition last year, and there are a bunch of Lakers fans that were screaming when the Buddy Hield trade did not go through and the Russell Westbrook yep. trade did go through. And now you're here with another undesirable roster that has kind of been handcrafted by LeBron. And while, you know, the Lakers, they can still figure out some way to get back in the championship game next year, is definitely looking a little bit dicey right now. So, you know, I'm not sure if you can make like a definitive statement on how the Lakers are going to end up with LeBron, but you're kind of standing on the edge of the cliff right now because you don't know which way things are going to go. And every year that LeBron ages, it only becomes a little bit more dire.
Yeah, and look, compliments to LeBron for having to use the phrase a little bit more there, because he is sort of defying every actuarial table that has ever existed.
But other than Tom Brady's.
Than Tom Brady. Yeah. By the way, another guy, incidentally, who has as much power over a front office as we have ever seen. Those two guys, and then a steep drop-off of the cliff to third place. But Charles, what you were saying before about expectations, though, is I think actually the game that's being played right now with LeBron James, because what he's trying to do is say, like, anything that happens from here on out is kind of going to be miraculous, because look at what I'm dealing with. And yes, Sarah, I totally agree that what he is dealing with is the hand that he dealt himself. I do fully agree with you there. But I think he is also already very successful in changing what the standard of success might be this season. Because the idea that you got a bubble championship, and I love that we're all just saying bubble championship, as if that's a hyphenated word now, because it does feel appropriate. It really does, honestly. But they have a bubble championship, and then what? And so the what question right now is, we're at the point where, like, being the team no one wants to play, as they will be deemed as a seed in the play-in tournament, will be something like a win, given that the expectation levels for this team in the present tense have dropped. I mean, to me is part of the brilliance of what LeBron James has done by getting us all to talk about what a mess the Lakers are.
I think, well, first of all, he didn't have to get us to talk about it. And I'm sure he would rather that we didn't have the opportunity to talk about them being a mess. I'm sure he would rather they weren't going to see the play-in tournament as some sort of win. I don't know if it is a win, Pablo. I think maybe in the moment, as a narrative arc, you can argue that anything accomplished above and beyond the very low expectations we have will be considered another feat of greatness from him. But ultimately, that's very quickly forgotten. And as far as his legacy is concerned, the Pyrrhic victories or the moral victories of, you know, everybody was hurt and I still made things happen. They've lost their luster unless they end with a title. We've already seen him do that numerous times with a roster that midseason we've said they have no chance and then they still end up winning. It doesn't matter if he gets close. It doesn't even matter if they outdo expectations at this point, because all that's left for LeBron is MVPs and titles. And the point with Bronny is what's also left is the opportunity to make some franchise buckets and buckets of money and himself. Well, because those games with Bronny, whether you do a documentary following it, whether you just sell out tickets every night, whether you sell feature stories and the movie rights to it, playing alongside Bronny in basketball, not baseball, basketball, your dad and your son on the same court, and not just any dad and son, but one of the greatest of all times. That's hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars worth of content. And that is going to be put in the lap of whoever decides that they want to take on that experiment.
I also love, Charles, how Sarah put "if" in front of "if they have a documentary." Of course, they're going to have a documentary about this. They have a documentary.
I just don't want to break any news. I don't have any insight on it. I have a feeling who's going to be in charge of it, but
yeah, I feel very comfortable declaring there's going to be a documentary. Yeah. And by the way, Charles, part of this also, like, this is the magic. So when you talk about expectations and coming and generating things out of nothing, like, this is also LeBron James building markets out of nothing. Right? It is a market for Bronny James, who is not an NBA prospect. It is a market for LeBron James, who is not able to leave the Lakers right now. But because Cleveland is now somehow in the discussion, suddenly it is, and on the record, suddenly, with LeBron James telling a reporter that he knows well, based out of Cleveland, based out of Akron, about it, it is also the thing of, well, if you guys keep LeBron James, guess what, Lakers fans? That too could be a win, even though you have no way to lose him, legally speaking.
Yeah, it's just another way, I feel like, for LeBron to flex, you know, kind of the power that he has. And I feel like all of this, the LeBron that we see now, it's still kind of a buildup from that decision that he made to go to the Heat, like all the way back when he realizes, oh, you know, I don't have to conform to whatever rules or norms have been put in place by superstars in the league before me. You know, we have gotten to a space where, you know, if he wants to do something his way, whether it's have a documentary that, you know, surely will definitely be slanted to give him a favorable view of himself, or, you know,
no,
putting himself...
never.
Yeah, I'm sure LeBron watched The Last Dance and was like, oh, I can do that for myself too, you know? We don't have to look at anything
by the way,
we don't want to here.
By the way, Charles, The Last Dance, in my view, was created in part because there was a response to LeBron James that Michael Jordan wanted to get on the record.
The myth-making was starting to get a little bit too even. And it was
exactly.
Charles is also, I was thinking about that as well. It's not just the idea that he learned that the system does not apply to him and he can create a brand new system, but also that you can hurt other teams that you do not choose while you are in the process of selecting where you end up. And that was so clear during that big three, during that the decision, where teams were just cleaning out rosters, just emptying out in case they needed the space. And then when LeBron made his pick, they were like, my brain just went to the Bulls, of course. Carlos Boozer, I guess. It was like, we got a lot of room for Carlos Boozer. So I feel like that's the other thing, is if he makes this, if he starts planting the seeds all over the league about the Lakers, the Cavs, Bronny, etc., he allows himself to potentially infect the decision-making of so many GMs, affect the egos of so many stars whose GMs are now looking at them saying, you might be a tradable piece instead of the guy we count on. And then that damage starts to spread, and wherever he ends up is even better positioned then.
Well, yeah. Go ahead, Charles, go ahead.
I'm gonna say, I also think it's incredible, like the time that we're talking about, where, you know, we're talking about a potentially 40-year-old LeBron James still being valuable enough asset that, you know, someone will say, here's LeBron James Jr., who we're not quite sure is even really an NBA prospect. He might be worth drafting so that we can have his 40-year-old dad play on our team. Like, just the scope of the accomplishments that are being done right now, it blows my mind every time I think about it.
The Sacramento Kings are going to offer a max contract to Bronny James when LeBron is like 45.
I mean, team is going to need this, because it's going to be the only way that they can be relevant, is to just bring the story to them, even if it doesn't necessarily bring the wins.
And by the way,
it's not even a bad idea.
No, well, yeah. Hold on,
no, because I'm not even against it.
And even and I love this. I love and so where I want the story to go next, how do I think this will play out? What I want, I mean, as content hoarding gas bag, what I want is for Rob Pelinka to develop a spine, man. Like, that's the one thing we haven't even begun to imagine.
You don't think
is, like,
not making any moves was part of that?
Because
you don't think
what
that
he
was
did,
him well, standing well, up to him?
It's a good question, Sarah, but afterwards, right, he's asked about it and he says, LeBron and Anthony Davis, they're on board with this too. To which LeBron says,
no.
Via leaks. Hell no. Yeah. Like, absolutely not. And that's kind of why we're getting to this back and forth, which is
so
sort
do you
of
think he lied
right
or do you think he misread the situation? Because one involves a spine and one involves being obtuse.
Well, speaking of people who may or may not have a spine, Alabaster has an interjection.
So, one, I object to that. I definitely have a completely normal spine. Find a new slant. But second of all, people being like, oh, Pelinka elected not to make a move at the deadline. What was the move? They have LeBron James and Anthony Davis and no other assets on the roster. If they trade
well,
the 2027
no,
pick
there was,
for John Wall,
there, that's
you have
the move
a worse
they...
version of one Russell
well,
Westbrook.
Or I'm is it possible?
DC. He stinks. He's always stunk.
There's that
you guys
spot.
You guys are better at the minutia of how NBA deals have to go down, but wouldn't it have been possible to take some veterans on expiring contracts and trade them to a team that had younger parts that are on longer deals, and that team doesn't want those longer deals because of some other turnaround that they're making, so they take on the veterans that aren't necessarily a value add, but the contractual add of that? Wouldn't that have been possible, potentially?
I mean, there's always the idea of like, hey, well, can we pay someone to take contracts off of our books? But I just don't know what you get in return if you're LeBron James, who's trying to win in the present tense. And Alabaster, I mean, raises a good point, right? The only deal that I've seen, Sarah, concretely leaked or rumored is Russell Westbrook and a first rounder for John Wall. And that's where I'm like, Rob Pelinka, what I would love to see is him defending his own honor. And like, there is a saber to be rattled here. And it is one that we've never seen rattled before. And it is the LeBron James, I might trade your ass. Yeah. And that is just the thing that none of us have even begun to like even contemplate, because it sounds ridiculous to even say it out loud.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just kind of baffling that the Lakers have even gotten themselves into this spot where, you know, it almost feels like your future is dim and you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis on your team. Like, that's just such a crazy
for another
concept.
Year at least.
Right,
just
for just
talk about
another year.
The incredible malfeasance in the creation of the roster, whether or not LeBron had the biggest hand in it, the idea that you could waste that opportunity. Now, Anthony Davis's injuries are a huge part of why this has been so bad, but the idea that you could have those two to start with and then you could surround them with what we all joked about before the season started and predicted would happen and has completely come true is a massive failure. And that's why, Pablo, I know you wanted to grow a spine, but I mean, maybe also, maybe your point is that he should have had a spine when LeBron was asking for those pieces to be put together as well. But there's got to be more than just LeBron taking the heat for this roster.
Oh, I think that's right. And Charles, look, I mean, just because I think it's funny to just actually talk about who is running the Lakers, like LeBron James, shadow general manager, yes. Rob Pelinka, titular general manager, yes. But also like Kurt Rambis and Linda Rambis, Kurt Rambis's wife, have all of this power behind the scenes. Like, part of me does think the war that's being referenced here is not unfamiliar to people who've covered dysfunctional franchises before, Charles. I mean, it's the idea that in sports, you have all of these cooks in a kitchen and they're not all going to be on the same timeline or be incentivized by the same things.
Yeah. Or even all just in a vacuum. Not even when you talk about working together and trying to be collaborative on deals and how to get this roster moved right back in the correct direction. Because I think an alarming thing for the Lakers and really just the organization is, you know, if you go back to like last summer, as this roster being built, you know, even just like your general NBA fans were just like, oh boy, okay, this looks like something that might not be, you know, the vehicle that can get LeBron James to the next championship, which is obviously
set the record
for
right. DNP olds,
right? Exactly. And the fact that no one in that organization is saying, hold on, let's pump the brakes here, like, is this really what we want to be doing? I think that is a really scary aspect if you're a Lakers fan. And you're supposed to be talking about these people that understand basketball on the highest level possible. LeBron James, Rob Pelinka, Kurt Rambis, like these people who have been around it for decades and decades, and they're still getting it wrong. And it looks like the scary right. part is you're going to waste the end of the careers of one of the greatest players you've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah. The wasting of it is what is a bummer, Alabaster. What do you got?
So before we move on, I do have one exercise for us. Just in the theoretical that LeBron does get traded this summer, I got to ask you guys, what do you think his hashtag is going to be? I'm going with Washed Kings, hashtag Washed Kings Ransom.
Ooh, you've been thinking about this. You sprung this on us as if it was just extemporaneous, but you've been workshopping at home, and now you've put us in the unfair position of trying to match that instantly.
Yeah, I'm going with hashtag Zero Dark 30 23 MSG, because he's absolutely going to be a Knick.
Can we not bring in the Knicks to every conversation? The Knicks have never bend the end point of any conversation they've been involved in for the last however many years, unless it was their inevitable regression to the mean this season, which was a conversation we had at the start of the season. Other than that, every single thing has to come back to, will they go to the Knicks? Why would they suddenly go to the Knicks when nobody else has? The hashtag.
I think it's going to go hashtag Bronny Senior.
I love that. Just leaning all the way in to being like a.
What was one of Bronny's trademarks? One of Bronny's trademarks was like
Bronald.
Bronald.
Hashtag the Bronald tour, which of course takes us to. That's not.
What I think about it. Sarah, and you could relate to this as the person who I think is guilty of this more often than my other friends who do these shows. What LeBron James is going to do, absolutely, is have so many Instagram story updates that those dots just become vanishingly microscopic.
I do that a lot. My Insta story becomes dots instead of hashes a lot. Usually music festivals, usually alcohol is involved. I'm going to be in Arizona next week, so you can bet those hashes are going to be dots.
That's a good self-scout.
You can bank on it.
Whoa.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy.
Wow. Oh,
I love when this happens. We're a live show in a real way.
We got some news.
All right, guys. This is an actual piece of breaking news. A Woj bomb, but from Shams. Shams tweeted.
Shams.
New York Mayor Eric Adams says there is a plan to phase out the vaccine mandate in the coming weeks, which would make Kyrie eligible for home games. Your thoughts? Sarah, please.
Swearing.
No, that's right. That's about right. I mean, this has been gestured at in recent days, right? Eric Adams has, by the way, I mean, there's just so many New
Let's
York
not get into it. Let's not get into Eric Adams right what now. Let's not do it.
But, we do about 10 shows on that.
Yeah.
Yes, but what he does love is the love of the crowd. And what he also has been saying in between the lines and now perhaps explicitly is, this doesn't have to be this way. New York is back, baby, which means that Kyrie can be back, comma, baby, exclamation point, hashtag Kyrie is back. And by the way, Adam Silver himself has been hinting at this too. Like, it's weird, and admittedly, it is inconsistent. That, like,
I don't know that he hinted at it more so. Yeah, he hinted that something would change because he had no power over it. He merely acknowledged what we all have said along the way, which is it doesn't make sense that the rules would be different.
Right, that the home team athletes are subject to regulations that the visiting players are not. All of which is to say, though, my larger point is the tide has been turning in recent weeks. And so the fact that Kyrie might have waited everybody out, That is a strategy that has clearly worked better than I initially thought it would.
Yeah. My first thought on this is, what a dub for Ben Simmons. Like, you're about to go from a spot where everyone hated you. You weren't getting along with Joel Embiid. You basically had failed all the expectations that they had placed upon you as, you know, the number one pick, potential savior of, 76ers basketball. Didn't do that. Didn't really do anything close to that. And now you get to play in a spot where not only is, Kevin Durant expected back at some point, but also you get the number two scorer. He gets to come back for all the games, putting you firmly into that number three scoring spot. which yeah. I think is probably the best role for Ben Simmons. So Ben Simmons, congratulations. You have finessed all of this. I hope you're doing better. And now we get Kyrie back. And hopefully for the Nets, at least, you get the team that you were hoping to get in terms of three legitimate all-star talents. And that's enough to at least get far in the Eastern Conference playoffs.
Absolutely.
I think the most difficult thing about this, and as somebody who admittedly holds sports grudges, I do have some empathy for Ben Simmons, but have at times been disgruntled by his choices. James Harden is on record as not my favorite. Tremendous scorer. The vibes and the approach to the love of the game portion has been off-putting to me for some time. And don't get me started on Kyrie. This is all leading me to the very unsatisfactory conclusion of all three of these people somehow manifesting what's best for them. Like, we have to just eat it. We have to just eat it that all of the choices made by these people led them to better situations, as dysfunctional and off-putting as those decisions were. Like, I'm just going to stop trying and tell everyone I want to leave. Okay, James Harden. Well, here, we'll go to a great situation alongside the front-running MVP for a team that is probably going to succeed with you there. Oh, Ben Simmons, you can't dunk the ball from a foot away from it? No. Hold on. Just hold out. Don't play at all. And let's set you up with a great Kyrie. You want to just not show up for games, not make any sense, spread misinformation, and end up fresh and ready? Great. Here you go. It's just so unsatisfying.
Well, this is why
I'm a hater. At me in the Menchies. I'm being a hater. I'm just being honest, though. I'm not even going to to feel otherwise. I'm just being honest. This is like what's best for them. Congrats, I guess.
Can I hold up the shield? Can I hold up the shield for, as the laziest of the lazy millennials, I would just like to say I'm inspired by the fact that some of these people can, like, you can have enough power where you just say, I'm just not going to do my job today. It's going
to
work out.
I'm not going to show up to work.
I love it. It's
going to be validated.
And not only
Charles, don't be that millennial. You're better than that. You're a working, successful guy.
Charles, if he follows his plan, we'll be a title favorite. Like, that's what we're dealing with. Sarah, your hate, I mean, as acknowledged, is delicious. I mean, it is. Charles, what we have here is a team that is now perfectly constructed. And there is that phrase, you know, hurt people. No, hurt people, it turns out, can also heal each other. This is what the Sixers and the Nets have done. They've said, you guys have massive problems, so do we. Guess what? Maybe we just trade those and it works out for both of us. I think this will work out for both of them. And the Nets, just to be very clear about this, because, you know, and I don't even need to be very clear about this because you know how I feel about Ben Simmons, but, like, this is the dream scenario. Like, when I was dreaming of ways to be vindicated on Ben Simmons is still a top 35 player, which has been my take this entire bleeping time, like, I dreamt of two scenarios. One was the Warriors, where he is passing the ball to Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. The other one is the Brooklyn Nets. I just thought it would have to be a trade for Kyrie Irving. And now it's a trade for James Harden. And instead, you get to pass the ball to, two 40-plus beyond-the-arc shooters in Kyrie and KD, who can do all the things, including take all of the attention away from you, because they're going to do some stuff that will infuriate Sarah Spain and Sarah Spain's.
Yeah, I mean, Kyrie's not done getting under my skin. Alabaster?
Okay, so this is actually where I push back on. I think Ben Simmons was in a great situation before where if Kyrie wasn't playing half of the games, it would inevitably be blamed when they lost a playoff series. But as we've seen before, the third wheel on NBA teams, I'll call this the Kevin Love Award. The metaphorical Kevin Love gets blamed when these teams lose because they're the low man on the totem pole. And Ben Simmons, inevitably, when he's 0 for 12 in the fourth quarter of a second-round series against the Bucks,
Kyrie is the reason that James Harden left and everything fell apart. It's still going to fall on Kyrie. It's not going to fall on KD, although he's going to get the claims of why did you leave the Warriors for this situation. Ben's too new. No chance. Expectations have been lowered.
Also, like the Kevin Love parallel, Alabaster, is that he's absolutely going to defend a Steph Curry 3 to win a title in the NBA Finals. That is also a thing Kevin Love has done, and Ben Simmons will also do.
I think what we learned here with the whole Ben Simmons, James Harden, Kyrie, you know, mess. Two wrongs don't make it right, but three wrongs might make it right.
all of the wrongs might make a right.
Yeah, if you just eventually you're gonna end up right. You take enough laps and enough wrongs, you're gonna end up right.
God, throw in Aaron Rodgers, and this year really is just validating and awarding all of the people for all of the choices.
But there is something I'm very happy about, Sarah, and it is, I think, because we're not going to have to do the Kyrie missing half the games. Endless debate.
The content would be incredible. Are they losing on purpose to be the away team because they can't be the home team and they need the advantage of playing away? Like, that content was going to be good.
It was going to be coal that we could shovel into our furnace that will warm our homes but kill us with its toxic fumes. Like, it would be great in the present, and then we'll realize we just lost 5 years of our lives because we did this.
Fair. Would it be great though if Eric Adams said this and then they just couldn't pull it off in time for the end of the NBA season?
Oh man.
Just like right around July.
I just can't wait for Eric Adams to sit courtside at Nets.
Oh, 100%. He's going to be a hero. It reminds me of a previous Brilliant, politician's honestly. Efforts to bring back Big Ten football ahead of elections, right? Like, this is going to be my thing. Eric Adams is going to be like, everyone hates me for all very valid reasons, but I brought back Kyrie.
Just driving a parade boat.
Well, I hope they have non-vegan snacks that are definitely actually vegan for Eric Adams' courtside at Nets games.
Eric Adams, definite real New York resident and not fake New Jersey resident.
Oh, man, what a mess.
All right, so we're going to move on to another disgruntled, maybe too disgruntled, maybe properly gruntled star in the NBA. And our question is about Zion Williamson. Should a team really want to mortgage their future to trade for Zion?
I mean, really is doing a lot of work as an adverb here, because like, I mean, in, as a function of magnitude, do they really want to do it? As a matter of plausibility, do they really want to do this? Like, yes and yes. This is the thing about acquiring superstars. This is the thing about LeBron James. This is the through line of all of these names that we've thrown out there. There are only so many of these guys who could be one of those guys. And Zion Williamson, as much as he is doing the thing that we thought James Harden was faking, right? Just like gaining a lot of weight very suddenly and being unplayable, even though he may earnestly be doing that, I have to believe that it's not over yet. And so, yeah, you got to roll the dice to the tune of $200-something million.
Yeah, that's how I feel. We've seen Zion play, and that's really all I need to know that I would be interested in trying to pull that off if I could. And I obviously, it's scary what has happened with Zion Williamson, not only in terms of the injuries, but the statements that JJ Redick made about him. But it's hard to find that body type, 6'6", 290, that can score 30 a game and also like 1 point on offense and guard every position on defense. So I think when you are looking at like the risk assessment here, he's so good that I don't think quite enough has happened to him just yet where you would have to rule out a trade, especially if you're one of these teams where you're having trouble getting your hands on one of these guys anyway, or you have a young piece and you're trying to add another. I think that, a lot of teams should be trying to get Zion Williamson off the Pelicans' hands. And if you can get him for the right price, it really, to me, there's no reason not to go after that.
I'm a nice person, okay? I'm like a usually uplifting people. I'm usually empowering and cheering for people. And this show has just made me a hater. Like, all the topics today are just right in my hater wheelhouse. And I do not hate Zion. I was tremendously impressed. I was rooting for him. I was super excited. The pieces are all starting to come together to paint a picture. Can you paint a picture with pieces? I think you make a puzzle. Yeah. Anyway, the point is, whatever is happening, the picture that is emerging is not
great.
I'm going to throw a little bit of the Kendrick Perkins pizza story. I'm putting a lot of weight in JJ Redick talking about.
Wait, what's the pizza story?
Kendrick Perkins today talking about how he started to worry about Zion when on draft night he ordered two pizzas to his room, and like that was there was more to it, but I think it was essentially
whomst among us, Kendrick Perkins. Whomst yeah. among us.
I mean, I just usually go with the one, and then when it arrives, I yell to no one in particular, pizza's here, even though I plan on eating the whole thing myself.
And yeah, two sets of silverware, please. I said alone.
I'll be like, I think he would he wants olives on half. My husband once accurately said to me, you know, when I am home and you don't yell that and the pizza delivery person can't see me, you don't yell it and they still aren't judging you. And so when I'm not home, there's no, I'm like, listen, don't try to get up inside this. Okay. It's not an adventure you want to go on.
There's also a kids menu voice that I should not have done, but did once. Yeah. Just a bad idea for obvious reasons.
A kids mac and cheese is just an appetizer.
Sometimes the only mac and cheese is on the kids menu.
Sometimes I want a peanut butter and jelly. Anyway. Absolutely. My point being, as I come back around to it, is the picture is not good, whether it's pizza related or otherwise. JJ Redick's comments I took very seriously because I think he's thoughtful in the way that he talks about this stuff. I think not calling CJ McCollum after he's been traded to your team, I think disappearing to rehab, I think the lack of transparency, and I don't think protecting whatever judgment might come about the size of your body is worth the amount of mystery and filling in the blanks that has resulted from him being completely absent from his team, absent from the media, not telling us anything about the rehab and how it's going to a completely different state and essentially not existing in the Pelicans world only adds to the questions about him. So while I understand that there are so few that can be great, I also don't want to sign myself up for a decade plus of the pain that comes with trying to create something and never knowing if the biggest piece of that something is available. And when it is available, how dedicated is it? How much of a priority is it? And I wonder, for all the attention that Zion's gotten, all the guessing at what could come, some of which has come in the form of injury, has affected his mental health. And I don't want to throw that out there, you know, willy-nilly like we're doing often these days, but I think there is a real question about somebody who's already suffered in the beginning of his career in this way, and who it then feels like is detaching from the game, from the team, from the sport. That would worry me going forward in terms of dedication.
So the foot surgeries, right? The need for a second one, maybe legitimately just like super depressing. I don't envy that. I don't think Zion Williamson is off living the life right now. He's hurt, trying to get better, trying to prove that he could be what he was as of a year ago when he was like a point center for the Pelicans and was excellent, like 27-7-7 or something like that. But there is, like, Charles, I'm reminded here, just based again on the through line of these themes today, I'm reminded, like, there's a real, like, I learned this from you, Dad, dynamic to what Zion's doing. Like, he's trying to say to everybody, I don't want to be a New Orleans Pelican, right? Like, I think it's an absolutely objectively bad teammate move to not talk to CJ McCollum. JJ Redick is right about that. There certainly can be a pattern of behavior that JJ saw in terms of aloofness that predated that even. But what Zion Williamson is also trying to do is be very clear about saying, I don't actually want to be your teammate.
Wait, hold on. This is the part that matters, though. Because I think to your point, Pablo, if you have intel that he's not all that injured, that he just doesn't want to be there and that he's forcing his way out, you can maybe feel better about building a team around him. If he instead needs another foot surgery, and this is not at all about him holding out from the Pelicans, but more so about his body failing him, that's a completely different story. And I don't know if we can know for sure which is the thing leading the way here.
Yeah, I guess my thing is what happened here? Where, because we've all seen situations where a star player gets hurt, misses a year or whatever, but the fact that he has just kind of separated himself from the rest of the team, clearly he doesn't want to be there. But also, what happened here for you to get to this point? Because this has been handled in such a bizarre manner that it's almost harsh for me to just like make, you know, one sweeping observation on what this could be, where, you know, I don't know, is it mental health? Is it something going horribly with the foot surgeries? Is it something that he's had with the Pelicans front office where there's been a butting of heads that absolutely like really offended him? It's just such a bizarre situation to find yourself in where you have one of the most valuable assets that an NBA team can have, like a 21-year-old person who we know if everything works out for Zion, he can be the superstar of superstars. But he's just not even showing up. And for me, I kind of want to know from the Pelican side, like, what is going on here to the point where there has been so little transparency on what one of the brightest stars in the game has gone. And it's just like a confusing topic to even start to grapple with, because there's been so much
shade on
what's going on. Right.
No, yeah. And that's why, Sarah, when JJ speaks up and he's critiquing Zion along those lines, what's notable to me also is that JJ Redick, when he stepped away and retired from basketball, right, after he got traded from the Pelicans to the Mavericks, had no love for David Griffin, the GM of this team. Like, this is not an instance of JJ Redick carrying
loyalty
water
to a
in
team,
a transparent
right.
way in any direction. Like, Zion went to Duke, right? David Griffin is a guy who did something, trade JJ to the Dallas Mavericks, that JJ absolutely did not want to happen. So the fact that through all of this, we're getting signal amid a bunch of noise, it just adds up to the feeling that at some point we're going to wake up and there's going to be a 5,000 word TikTok about how it is that everybody sort of crap the bed in various ways.
Yeah.
That's the feeling that I'm getting right now.
I'm also sort of fascinated by both sides of the Zion Pelicans alleged beef being empathetic in some ways to me. You've got Zion, who I feel sorry for all the health stuff and also being in a position where he very clearly is unhappy. But I also feel like the Pelicans already did not capitalize on Anthony Davis and lost him. And then in a swoop of excitement and chance end up with Zion and look to be potentially suffering the same result. And is that their fault? And to Charles' point, I'd like to know why then. I would like to get inside that team. And what is it about the machinations over there that turn away stars, or they don't feel like they're going to succeed there, or the building of the roster is so terrible, or anything else? Because that's also sad. If the Pelicans have the luck of that lottery and then still manage to end up without either of those stars that they had.
Yeah,
yeah, I think, and it's to me with the Pelicans, it's kind of weird, because when you acquire Zion, it's not like they didn't try to get him, you know, younger stars to play with, because they had all the assets from the Anthony Davis trade. You know, I think because one of the exciting things was you had Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram, and those appeared to be two legitimate young stars.
Lonzo Ball was also on that team.
Right. And I think, you know, if we're looking at a Pelicans team right now with the strides that Brandon Ingram has made in his career, and you can say, moving forward, Brandon Ingram is by far the second best young player that the Pelicans have. Like, it feels like a whole different franchise. And I guess I just want to go back to, like, my previous point is, what happened here where this is falling apart so quickly? Because even with Anthony Davis, it wasn't, you know, 1 or 2 years where before it all fell out and no one wants to be here anymore. You know, you even get to the first extension that he signs with the Pelicans before things really start getting bad. And to me, the fact that this is really just kind of overnight turned into a situation where no one can even get into the same room is just frankly bizarre.
It also speaks to the nature, and this is where I feel like the New Orleans Pelicans front office must be screaming, obviously silently for now, but screaming nonetheless, that, like, we're a small market team. Right. You may think of New Orleans as a really fun party city where guys would want to play, but no one actually feels that way. No one actually wants to play for the Pelicans. Anthony Davis didn't, Zion Williamson didn't, because they know, A, in that city, like, the Pelicans are a super distant afterthought, right? Like, the Saints are not the Pelicans.
We'll see if that lasts. We'll see if that lasts with no Sean Payton, no Drew Brees, and potentially
also,
no wins.
But I feel very confident in thinking, as Charles McDonald rubs his hands like Birdman.
He's here, like, ooh, football? Like, football?
Yeah.
I'm a Falcons fan, so this Saints
there we go.
Beautiful.
Exactly. But the Pelicans, I think they are undoubtedly furious that they can't retain the number one overall picks that they keep drafting.
Yeah.
And a function of that is because I think those players understand in their own self-interest, I want to play in a bigger market where we can get other free agents to opt into playing as opposed to conscripting them in this sort of.
We've seen other small markets pull it off. We've seen Milwaukee Bucks win it all. We've seen what John Morant is doing. Like, I think it's got to be about the front office and the people pulling the strings more so than it is the city. But that's me.
I imagine. Okay, Alabaster.
Yes, Alabaster.
So you
first,
are interjecting.
Sarah, I have to push back a tiny bit on the Bucks thing. They horrifically mismanaged that situation and wanted to give Jabari Parker the main max over Giannis Antetokounmpo. So they sort of backed into that one. Second
right,
of all,
but it still happened.
Yeah, of course. But it's also worth noting that the Pelicans, it was not just passing on Lonzo Ball. They traded Drew Holiday to the Bucks for picks that are now roughly useless at the end of the first round. But my big question for you guys, and this is, I'm about to go full wins are a superstar stat, because in the NBA they are. And
I
my
agree.
Question is, why are we treating Zion Williamson like a for sure superstar that you want to mortgage your future around? We're looking at someone like Evan Mobley, and he's able to turn a roster with the Cavs that actually has a similar talent level to the Pelicans into a four seed in a better conference. Zion Williamson has not been a two-way player who has helped this team win over the limited time that he's healthy. Shouldn't that be scary? And shouldn't that like jade the perception of going all in for this guy who he had so much,
yes,
such huge hopes for?
Hence my hater answer to do not do it.
Yeah, but I mean, Alabaster, like, I think this is where the injuries are both the symptom and an excuse and possibly the whole like problem with this story, right? Like, I don't, if a guy's missed 117 games in his first three seasons, I don't actually know what we have. I don't. I just know that in theory, the guy is unlike any other player I've ever seen before. And when you have a wins are a superstar stat dynamic in the NBA, which is absolutely right, unlike in football, obviously, I just feel like, how often do those guys come around, right? Evan Mobley is an absolute phenomenal, like, generational talent. But, like, the fact that he's even a comparison point to Zion is kind of like the point of the conversation, right? Like, these are incredibly rare creatures.
Yeah, and I think one thing that Paula just said is important here in theory, because I'm fine working in theory with Zion Williamson still at this point. He's only 21. He doesn't turn 22 until this summer. And even with the small sample size that he's put together in the NBA, and there has been a whole lot of winning, but the production that we've seen on the court has been incredible. It's been outstanding for someone of his age. So, you know, I don't think that it needs to be, you know, a definitive thing on where he ends up in the future, because one, that's like impossible to figure out with what happened, with what has happened so far. But at the same time, the results of him actually being on the NBA courts have been so magnificent that I think it's okay, you know, still kind of working with this aura of a positive possibility for his future instead of, you know, letting what has actually happened, you know, sour you on what's happening. But I totally understand being positive or negative in either stance. But just when I think about what it means to potentially have something this good on your team, I think you still kind of got to go for it if you're a team that's in a situation where they can make it happen.
I think Charlie's disagreeing with you, though, that what's been on the court has been magnificent. I think what he's saying is statistically Zion's been impressive, but it hasn't resulted in the team being good. And there is, to Pablo's point, we haven't had a big enough sample size to understand if that's who he is. Is he a superstar draw that's a magnetic player who doesn't actually make the team good enough to compete? Or have we just not seen him be healthy for long enough in an extended period of time to know whether that can translate into team wins?
Yeah, look, Alabaster, right? Here are the stats on Zion Williamson, right? His rookie year, he's 19 years old. He plays 24 games, right? 23-6-2, right? 58% shooting from the field. Like, you know, pretty good. 2021, he's 20 years old, plays 61 games, 27 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists. And in that stretch where he played point guard, he was transcendent. And he shot in that season over 60% from the field. And that's it. That's all we've gotten from him. Like, I think, like, there is the should and there's also the will, right? We can debate the should, but I absolutely believe that a team, and maybe it's the Sacramento Kings, maybe it's the Knicks, maybe it's a bad team, some team absolutely will mortgage their future because the promise of him is as described.
Oh, the Knicks. Wouldn't that be such a... Man, I'm such a hater
today.
Almost
too on the nose.
It really is. It's too many topics at once that I
hate. Yeah. Alabaster, I think we're setting a record.
I'm about to say, Alabaster.
Yeah, and I'm here for it. And I'm here for it.
Just to put a bow on this and, like, you know, maybe push. This might actually help your point a little bit. But while the stats are incredible, and this could be because of injuries, Zion used to be a really vertical player, someone who was exciting above the rim, and this is someone who evolved into a below the rim quickness player who's making layups at a really high rate. And this is also someone I would say that the trademark Zion Williamson highlight at Duke was when he blocked DeAndre Hunter's shot, coming out as a weak side defender. And DeAndre Hunter is someone who's a bit of an extraterrestrial, even in the NBA, with his length and his athleticism. Zion's a matador on defense now. And that might be because of conditioning and injuries and yada, yada, yada. But, even with these stats, he has not, taken our imagination of Zion Williamson and brought that to any sort of reality. This is not the player that we wanted to see.
It's a different player. There's no doubt. And by the way, everything you're saying, Sarah, I mean, it just reminds me, this is why if I'm Zion Williamson, and I don't dispute what Alabaster said in terms of what the expectation was versus the reality, this is why you're taking the mystery box approach to your career right now.
Yeah, I mean, but that's why I'm worried, because I think if there isn't a need for mystery, you can feel more secure in the decision you're making. If mystery serves him, then that could be a revelation about what's going on health-wise and otherwise, and that is a big red flag.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, I think we can move on.
I'm glad I'm not a GM or an owner. Well, I am an owner, but I'm glad I'm not an NBA.
Yeah, you
GM.
Are. I am an owner. Oh, right. Yeah. What a flex.
Wow. The accidental stumbled into that flex.
You've been fined as an owner, Sarah.
I have already. Got that framed on my wall.
All right, guys. We're just going to move on to one bonus topic because we have filled it up on the NBA. And that is a tweet from Long Live the Queen, who said, "The third wheel always gets blamed, which is why whenever there's a bad show, everybody blames Pablo."
You know what?
Some may call that a third wheel. Some may call that a messianic figure, right? I will die for your sins. Sure.
I wouldn't have gone that direction of calling myself a god.
Thank you, Pablo, for your generosity.
Yep. I think the way that Pablo led the show makes him more of the first wheel getting blamed for things going off the road, more so than the third.
I think I can take the blame here because I think this is 2 of 5 appearances for me where someone has dropped a hard curse word. So
yeah,
I clearly that's something.
You know what? I don't think shit's a hard curse word. Okay. If I did, I wouldn't say it again on purpose.
Every follow-up question I have will just lead to us dropping more hard curse words.
That's not a hard curse word. Thank you. I was waiting for that card earlier. I know you haven't made already, so I did wonder why you hadn't busted it out.
So it's a soft curse word is what you're saying.
In my family, you know, the colloquialisms that were dating back several generations involved how much money you had to put in the jar. So the 50 center, we all know what that one is. The 50 cent, that's a lot. I don't think shit, to make it a trifecta, is worth more than a nickel. It's a soft curse.
For the podcast audience, we are now being played off of the stage like people who have given a far too long Oscar accepted speech, as is our wont.
Who will no longer be allowed to do so, as their categories have been removed from the telecast.
That's right. We are editing.
We ain't off the stage.
That's going to be me. I'm going to be the makeup person who no longer gets to accept the award on stage. It's too much swearing.
Oh. I do blame Charles McDonald, though.
That's fine. It works for me.
These millennials. He's Gen Z. Are you Gen Z?
No respect.
No, I'm still millennial. Barely.
He's a baby.